I'm going to read a couple of poems from my book. First, I want to thank all of the readers, and I want to underscore that the readers have books for sale. Lauren, do you have books for sale too? Did you bring copies of your book? Yes, a few of Michelle's book. Leslie? Has some? Yes? On the table. Okay, yes, I just wanted to say that. It's great to read with you, and thanks for having me. I'm going to read this poem. This poem is about translation. I actually have only ever translated one poem, so I'm not a translator. But if you can imagine the sort of delicate process of ushering something from one whole language and context into another, that's sort of what this poem is about. But it's really actually about this bag that you can find in certain bodegas in New York, especially in Brooklyn. The lettuce bag. Can you hear me? Yes? The lettuce bag. The luckiest lettuce comes in a plastic sleeve that expands web-like to cradle the largest red leaf or the smallest butterhead. If a rose were the size of a head of romaine, its petals would be held unbruised. The lettuce bag would not distort the most bouffant beehive hairdo. Indeed, you could slip it over an actual beehive, a small one, and its grid of plastic tethers would barely impress the delicate wax. If labias were in season, their tender interiors, their roundness would be touched by the grocer's mist. The lettuce bag has the same selflessness that a good translator has for a French poem. The little plastic sleeve moves me like a suffragette, but I am being too grand. Abundantly soft and pliant, its perforations clean. The bag has a modest beauty. In the modern refrigerator, though, lettuce goes limp as a peignoir, unless stored in an astronaut helmet. I'm going to read another. I began my professional life as a designer in industrial design, so I'm a bit obsessed with nifty things. So I'm going to read another thing poem. This is a poem I don't usually ever read. So I'm going to read it here tonight. Packing tape. Descendant of Puritans, packing tape vouchsafes little intelligence of its overseas journeys. In the desk drawer, it's mum, set to do the job. As my father asks no questions of his breakfast, it fills the stomach. Prepare to bind mightily the flaps of your box. Inside, some fragile thing afloat in shredded paper. With the first pull, the roll makes a hurt growl. Strap the long sides fast, and the tape sounds like fish slapping a deck. Ease the last inches round the edge, hear child hands patting wet sand. The roll's spaniel teeth bite off any length with mean precision. Now, even if you drop it down the front steps, the box will harbor its contents. 100 cartons sealed thusly gleam in moving vans, the sole glamour of packing tape being its shine, slick as lip gloss on a teenage daughter. We actually sold our house this morning, so I guess I have that on the... Yay! Okay. I'm going to read a few poems from a new project I'm working on. And I'm going to start with one quite short poem from my second book, which is called The Garden Room, which is just filled. It's a completely obsessive book about things along the lines of what I just read. And I'm reading this poem. My new project that I'm working on is about race. I'm trying to write about racial identity, racialization, and whiteness, which is an almost impossible thing to do, I'm finding out. Anyway, so I was writing this poem many years ago, and I showed it to some friends, and someone said, I was actually writing about this certain color, white, like literally a color, white, because I'm obsessed with colors, paint colors and textile colors. And she said, haven't you ever thought about the fact that this poem is about white, like the color white? Have you ever thought, you know, have you ever noticed this? And I said, that's ridiculous. No, I've never thought about that. It's completely irrelevant. But I thought a lot about it recently in the last couple of years since I've been trying to work on this new project. Anyway, I want to read this one and then a new one, and I hope you'll see the relation between them. Okay, color of the sheets. Far from the dominant science of white, I found this white in continual pour. In the midst of this ordinary place, the bed, flooding the space between my eyes, a sudden clearing and then a floating at waist level, neither putting itself gaily forth as a sail nor sequencing itself like a pearl. Shall I hand you such noblesse? It makes my heart clutch out to see a thing so long moored finally commence. Will I see it fail in your sights in the midst of an ordinary place, whiteless? I weep at how I can count on it, such unreasonably good fate in the midst of a life. Even a small Satan like myself, it will accept. So when I wrote these poems, which are each about an object in the manner of the book Tender Buttons by Gertrude Stein, if you know that book, I would meditate on an object and go into a sort of trance and then write about it. And now, I can really hardly believe it. Words like noblesse and will I see it fail in the midst of an ordinary place? I mean, what about this? Such unreasonably could fate in the midst of a life, you know, about this certain color white. I really feel kind of amazed now that I never saw this about this poem. And like, for instance, in working on this new project, I've tried to find things to talk about and think about that are absolutely incontrovertibly white, which is really impossible. Impossible to do. But there is that, have you ever seen those t-shirts that say, life is good? Have you seen those t-shirts? I feel like if there's one thing on earth, like in America, in the US, that's incontrovertibly white, it is those life is good t-shirts. Anyway. Okay, so as a way to spiritually correct that poem, there's this new draft. And I should say that I consider all these things I'm reading tonight new and failed, in a way, drafts, because I'm really trying a whole bunch of different ways to write these new poems, and I don't know what, if any, of these is going to work. Anyway, 16 of our most popular whites. And it begins with a quote by Min Hogg, who founded this magazine called World of Interiors in Britain. People go to the gallows still thinking about white. 16 of our most popular whites. Chalkhurst white, named after the historic conjoined twins. Ether, our cleanest and whitest white. Shrive, the white of old, carefully laundered, starched cotton. Triplicate, the color of the last form at the bottom of the pack. Sack, similar to triplicate, but with less warmth. Matinee, white of the popcorn fallen out of laps in the side aisles. Mantua, this color will look white in almost any old situation. Blink white, provisional, but not quite cantankerous. Brine, a delightful clear white that makes the knuckles ache. Dominant white, as in the standard plastic takeout fork. White lerp, named after the insect nymph of Queensland. Noose, an ideal white to temper some of the more glaring whites. Nuance, our most sought-after white, not currently available. Peerage, made with a pigment obtained by collecting the residue from fog. Likelihood, for fans of peerage, this color, although not as authentic, is always stocked, high gloss only. Lull, a misty white with full coverage, effective in institutional settings. Do you guys know, is anyone else here a paint dork besides me? Like, so have you heard of Farrow and Ball paint? Has anyone heard of Farrow and Ball paint? No. Yes? Yes.
I wrote a poem about paint colors.
Oh, you did? Okay. Oh, okay. So if anyone else is kind of obsessed with Farrow and Ball paint, which I've used for years, and I won't talk about it right now. But so the form of this poem is entirely based on the form of their descriptions of paint colors. All right. So this poem I was just working on again, so I've never read it. I'm really not sure if it works at all. But because it's in the manner of the poems in my book, The Garden Room, and it's about a poem in Tender Buttons, I thought I would read it. So the little tiny story behind this is I was teaching Tender Buttons this semester, I don't reread the entire book every time I teach Tender Buttons, but it turns out that apparently I hadn't really ever read all of Tender Buttons very carefully before. So this is a moment in the middle of reading this. I don't know anyway. We'll see if this works. It's called When in the Middle of Dinner, which is one of the poems in Tender Buttons. When in the Middle of Dinner. A little past egg ear nuts, a little past needless R, a little past a little moon to super. Oh, I was made to say egg ear. I am a reader made to say super, made to say dinner, put it all together. A seatbelt unclicks, a nosebleed loosens. Egg ear, throw cloth on the bomb, something's burning, something's itching. Who said to eat here? Dinner got horrid. It wants to be smaller. It wants to be omelet, a toddler at a counter in some harmless diner. Let's have a do-over. Rewind to breakfast, a nip of butter. You'll like it. It's super hopping through this thicket, isn't it? A sharp singe, a record scratch. I had come here freely, all eager. I was innocent, was I? Now there's a current, a spill on the table, a downed wire in it. I am the conductor. My whole life that word went untasted ever. I came seeking sustenance. A poem's a luger. I was a charming and harmless chigger. An author's a tripwire. Did you get it? Did it work? Okay. I can explain later. If that didn't make any sense, please stop me. Later. I'll talk. Okay. This is the last one I'll read in this series of poems about trying to write about race. And so this is a prose sestina. And one of the things I've been trying to do since even thinking and talking about race and racialization is very, very anxious for me. It's a very anxious topic and an anxious project. And I spent so long, like 18 months, only reading and doing research, and reading and reading and reading and doing research, and thinking, I can really never write about this. Because I kept waiting for like a clear space to write a poem. And I kept only feeling anxiousness about it. And finally I thought, well, maybe I can use the anxiousness as materials instead of thinking of it only as an obstruction. So here's a prose sestina about an event. It's called I Got This. I am looking for Crime and Punishment in the Atlanta Airport Bookstore. Pittsburgh had classics. Pittsburgh had three Dostoevskys, but no Crime and Punishment. Atlanta has a shelf of African American fiction and a shelf of new fiction. Do they look different? Do the AFAM spines look like the raw silk dresses, sapphire and gold, in the window of that shop off Penn Ave? No, they look the same as the ones in new fiction. New fiction does have a few pure white covers, as though there are stories, matte and blank as bridal gowns. Crime and Punishment has pond gold, stained gowns, sex. It's got murder for cash, an axe in the face. Where would it be? Do you have Crime and Punishment? I ask, feeling not hopeful. The clerk, African American, is unboxing earbuds. Who's the author? He says. He has a tall fade and a sparkly diamond stud. Every poster in the Atlanta airport shows a smiling African-American salesperson handing a white person a box of chocolates or a fancy shoe. I start going on about how Pittsburgh let me down. I thought for sure Atlanta would have what I wanted. I'm talking in that too fast, silly friendly way I have. I can't stand. The author, he says, of Crime and Punishment? My college boyfriend ID'd me as one of those people who pronounce foreign names correctly. He said this with contempt. I need to say Dostoevsky. I could say it fast, as though motorcycling down an alley filled with broken glass. Or matter-of-factly, as if I were tossing a half-eaten sandwich off a bridge. The right way to say Dostoevsky means, I know you read Crime and Punishment, why wouldn't you have? Crime and Punishment asks, where is the good in us? Crime and Punishment says, we are made of strange ideas that float in the atmosphere. The African-American salespeople on the airport poster smilingly hold up satin pumps. I can't get my hand off this axe. I need to chop something up. I need your suffering. Have infinite room in my carry-on. If I say Dostoevsky, what will I read as? It is no more white to say Dostoevsky than it is to pay $12 for a turkey sandwich staling in the onboard lounge. I get that. I want everyone in this airport to be able to pay $12 for a turkey sandwich made yesterday. Music leaks out of someone's earbuds. It sounds like whisks stirring around in a metal bowl. Whisk, 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 whisk. Shut up and say Dostoevsky. But I already did. A minute ago, my voice said Dostoevsky all on its own, enthusiastically, as if it were the kind of mint I like, sour watermelon in the round box. Oh, right, says the clerk, Dostoevsky, and heads for the stacks. They close the classics section, he says, but we've got it here. Here. On my way to pay for Crime and Punishment, I stop by African American. Oh, tell me something true. I need a way to the souls of black folk, the czars of black oaks, the spools of black clocks, the shoals of black forks, stones and black smoke. Now I have been standing way too long holding airport pulp with smiling African-American people on the covers as though I had stopped too long to stare at a wedding party coming out of a church. Carry on, carry on. The clerk hands me Crime and Punishment and my receipt. Atlanta's got you, he says, smiling brilliantly. I always love it when something or someone has got me, and I smile brilliantly back. Thank you. Where is my last poem? Ah, here we go. Okay, so in a way, I think all these new poems that I'm trying to write are catching up to this one poem from this new book that I wrote quite a while ago. Because it's a poem that it's sort of about. It's about narcissism and power, and I don't really know how I managed to write this poem, but anyway, maybe I'll figure out a way to make new poems that work something like this poem. Excuse me, where's Varick Street? Varick, yes, just, oh, Film Forum, sure. Go straight down Carmine and turn left. Wait, did I say to turn onto Houston after Varick? Actually, I'm walking that way. You're welcome. Actually, you can turn here before Varick. This street dead ends at Film Forum. In fact, I'm going to Film Forum. Would you like me to carry you? I was going to carry something anyway. Did I say to walk through the air molecules on the southwest corner of, let's count 40 blocks of sidewalk. No, wait, 37 paving stones to the corner. The ticket window is there on the south side of Houston. Coincidentally, I am also going to see the Tarkovsky. I am plowing and harrowing my soul, rendering it capable of turning to good. Two, please. I was going to buy two tickets anyway. My pleasure. The brownies here are delicious. In fact, I'm going to get one. Here, let me feed it to you. I am good for you. I'm good also for lost Japanese women, for the boys and big brothers, big sisters. I'm always seated next to them at weddings. For the aggrieved, the grieving, the recently blind. Are you going to sit there? Coincidentally, I am also going to sit there. Can you see out of my eye holes? Are you comfortable? Thank you.